Okay, Brother Frank, start my time. This is my last speech. I appreciate everyone coming out tonight. I hope that you'll come back tomorrow afternoon as we continue on this topic. I will be in the affirmative, and Pat, my neighbor, my brother, will be in the negative. And then tomorrow night we'll discuss the doctrine of election. So I hope that your appetite's been whetted and that you'll come back. And I hope we both presented ourselves as gentlemen. We've pressed our points. But he is a friend of mine. We wouldn't have eaten together. We'll go out to eat again. And, you know, about Romans 14:1, you know, weak in the faith. He was arguing that proves there in the church. It's weak in regard to the faith, is what it means. They're weak in regard to the Christian faith. That's why we're still, that I might gain the weak. See, they haven't been gained yet. They're still lost. And the end of that chapter shows that they don't have faith, so that interprets what he means in verse 1. They're weak in the faith, meaning regard to the faith. And the word faith, as a noun, often means the religion. So they're weak in regard to the religion of Christians. That's what it means. So, you know, it's going to take me a little while to clean up the mess that Brother Pat has made. It takes longer to clean up one than it does to make one. Now, I think I've answered all his arguments in Scriptures except three, and I want to get to them. Going to John about the vine and the branches, he's made a number of arguments. I've responded to a few of them I have not. He says, now you're clean. So that means that everyone who's outwardly, visibly attached to the vine is truly in the vine. But if you read John 8, Jesus says, now you're clean, but not all of you. So he excluded Judas. And I don't believe here in John 15, when he says, now you are clean through the word, that he's talking about Judas. Because he done in two chapters earlier, excluded Judas. Now you're clean, but not all of you. And the word clean here in the Greek is purging. It's not like a washing, it's like you prune. So it's purging. And the purging is that's being done is the good branches that are being cleaned. It's not the dead branches. And we all know, if we're gardeners, about what it means to graft in a branch. I don't know whether you all have done any grafting or not, but I see some of these dogwoods that's half pink and half white. You know, that tells me somebody come along and grafted a branch in there. But I know people that graft things. Do you know sometimes it doesn't take? You know, they just didn't get that vital connection there. But hey, if you went by and looked, that guy stuck it in there like you grabbed, got it all, stick it in there, right? And it's a part of the vine, but somehow or another, some grafts don't take. Brother, that's what it's talking about, Pat. Now, he says, I didn't answer or didn't deal with certain things, which is not the case. First of all, he said, Steve didn't deal with the fact that Romans 14 says in 1 Corinthians 8 that the weak brother perishes for whom Christ died. I did deal with that. I said, Pat, it doesn't say that Christ died for every idolater or every pagan. Did he die for the pagans in the Old Testament that were already in hell when he died, Pat? According to you, if he died for every pagan, those who had already died and we're in hell at the time Christ died. He was dying for those pagans that were already in hell if he died for every pagan. So he's saying Christ died for these kinds of people. That's what he's saying. And I answered it and you said I didn't deal with it. Maybe you weren't listening then. But I did deal with that. And that's what he's saying. Now, when he got into Romans 14, where the verse says, they shall be made to stand. He didn't deal with that. He quoted the end part of that. That gave you the reason why God's going to make them stand. For God is able. So he just dealt with the latter part of it. But he didn't deal with the positive declaration that the master of every true Christian servant, the master is going to see to it that they stand. Brother, you just can't deal with that. To his own master, he stands or falls. Yea, he shall be made to stand. He didn't deal with that. Now let's go to 2 Peter chapter 2. Now he seems to want to debate the atonement. Now we don't have as good a crowd as I thought we might have. Maybe tomorrow we'll have more. But if you want to come back and debate the atonement sometime, you seem to be anxious to debate that. Maybe these brethren will see that it was put on well. We'll invite you to come back and we'll debate the atonement. Okay? But in 2 Peter chapter 2, you're basing your whole argument basically on the fact that somebody here was bought. Or again, are we debating the atonement? Did you prove they were regenerated? The proposition says we're talking about somebody regenerated. Even the elect before they're regenerated do a lot of things. So we're not talking about that. We're talking about somebody who's been regenerated. Not somebody who was chosen to be regenerated, but they hadn't been regenerated yet. Next, in Hebrews chapter 3, where Paul says, I'll get to 2 Peter in a minute about the fault, but I want to mention this. He says, I didn't deal with Hebrews 3. I did deal with Hebrews 3. I said, I quoted the New International Version, take heed, brothers, lest there be in any of you an evil heart. In other words, he's telling them, hey, you might have come in like one of these shallow ground hearers without a good and honest heart. He's not implying. Now, he says that Paul, when he had wrote these epistles, because he called them brother, that means every member of that church was truly born again. You know, when Paul wrote the letters to the church in Galatia, it wasn't the one church, to the churches of God in Galatia. He's saying that Paul had absolute knowledge of every member of every one of those Galatian churches and knew that every one of them was born again because he wrote by inspiration. Brother, that's a stretch now. Well, let's go to 1 Corinthians. 1 Corinthians chapter 11, I think verse 12 and 13, Paul says, for there must be factions, heresies among you. And I hardly believe it. For there must be heresies among you. Why, Paul? Why must there be heresies among you? Why does God allow that? That they which are approved of God may be made manifest among you. Corinthians! Brother, that proves Paul knew that every Corinthian brother wasn't truly born again, truly approved of God, because he says these factions, this division among you, is showing who was really approved of God, who was a good ground hearer, and who was not approved of God, that came in stealthily without a real conversion. So I did deal with that. And then in Hebrews 3, he says, oh, he addresses them as holy brothers. Therefore, every one of them are truly holy. Well, verse 1 says, let us hold fast our profession. Doesn't he use the word profession there in verse 1? You want to emphasize the fact he says, holy brethren. Therefore, he knew the hearts of every one of these that he was writing to. I don't believe that at all. Also in 1 Corinthians, doesn't he say in 15, chapter 15, verses 1 and 2, by which you are saved, unless you believed in vain? What well, according to you, he shouldn't have had a doubt. He should have already known if he's got the kind of omniscience you say he had when he wrote this. Unless you have believed in vain. So some of them in Corinth had believed in vain, right? They like those shallow ground hearers that believe for a while. And did you see the position he's taken throughout this debate? Those shallow ground hearers, even though they didn't have a good and honest heart, were born again because it says they believed. Then he says, anytime you read falling away or departing, you can't depart from something you don't actually have. Haven't we already disproved that? It says the shallow ground hearers, they believe for a while and fall away. Well, they didn't fall away from what they really had because they didn't even have true salvation. So we've proven that that's not the case. And didn't we also show in Luke 8:18 that he admitted that people can have taken away what they don't really have. But the word taken away is there. According to him, they can't have anything taken away but what they really have. Jesus said that's not true. They can have taken away what they only seem to have. Isn't that how I explained Galatians 5? You are fallen from grace. That's the way it looks to me, Paul saying. You see? Now, getting back to 2 Peter chapter 2, even denying the Lord that bought them. Pat, I don't deny that there's a sense in which Christ died on the cross for every man, that every man was in a sense bought by the Lord. I deny that 2 Peter chapter 2 verse 1 is talking about that he bought the elect. In Matthew chapter 13, Jesus says the kingdom of heaven is like a treasure hid in a field, the which when a man hath found, he goes and sells all he has and buys that field. Well, notice, he buys the field in order to purchase the treasure hid in the field. He doesn't really want the field, he wants the treasure hid in the field. But in order to get the treasure, he purchases the field. Jesus says the field is the world. So there's a sense in which Christ bought all men and all things by His death on the cross. That you might see that, let's go to Romans 14, where we spent a lot of time so far. And may I say this while we're turning there, that we just can't deal with this subject adequately in two sessions. That's why He could only come up here for a day. It would have been great if we had a whole week on this subject. But notice in Romans 14, let me find that verse. Okay, verse 8 and 9. For whether we live unto the Lord, And whether we die unto the Lord. Whether we live, therefore, or die, we are the Lord's. For to this end, Christ both died and rose and revived. Why? That he might become the Lord, the owner, the possessor of the dead and the living. Brother, by Christ's death on the cross, he purchased the world, he purchased the dirt, he purchased the animals, he purchased every human being. Now, are we going to say that in this purchase on the cross that he purchased the elect with the same intent that he purchased the non-elect? No. I gave you the illustration. He purchased the world, the field, in order to get to the treasure. And to say that his intention in purchasing the field was the same as his intention in purchasing the treasure is what he's doing. So I don't deny that there's a sense in which Christ bought all men. Now, I deny that in 2 Peter chapter 2 that those people were truly born again. Let's just look at what it says in 2 Peter chapter 2 about them. He's got four things that he believes proves that these people were elect and born of the Spirit of God. One, because it says in verse 1, Christ bought them. I've dealt with that. Secondly, he says that, Steve, down there in the end of the chapter, it says that these who, like the dog returning to its vomit, like the sow that was washed returning to her mire, these people had turned from the way of righteousness and the holy commandment. Well, that shows they were saved because they had received the holy commandment and had heard and known the way of righteousness. So that's two. Thirdly, he says they've escaped the pollutions of the world through this gospel knowledge. Therefore, they must be truly born again. And fourthly, he argues that the text says that they have escaped and become disentangled themselves from the pollutions of the world and then become entangled again. That's just four reasons. I'll deal with the three I haven't dealt with. But let me give you 20 reasons why they're not truly born again against the four you bring. Okay? One, in verse 10, they're called presumptuous, are they? Brother, a presumptuous person presumes to be what he's not. Then you quote that text, let him that thinketh he standeth take heed lest he fall. Brother, there's some people that think they're saved, but they're not. I've dealt with that quite a bit. But it says of these, presumptuous are they? That means they're hypocrites, doesn't it? That they're arrogant and audacious in claiming to be what they're not. Notice what he also says in verse 10. They're self-willed. How could that be a description of a child of God? Why? A child of God is not self-willed. His will is controlled by his master. Then notice in verse 1. He calls them pseudo-teachers, false teachers. How in the name of God in the first verse that these people you're talking about, Peter calls them false right from the outset and you want to make them true? I don't get it. And then verse 2, he says, many shall follow their pernicious ways. Pernicious, is that a word that we use to describe somebody truly been born again? I don't think so. And then notice verse 3, shall they with feigned words. Well, like they have feigned words, they have a feigned profession. The word feigned is in there. Then look at verse 12. But these as natural brute beasts. That's what they are. Where's regeneration there? Verse 12. Things they understand not. How could you say that was a Christian? Well, I guess he's saying these weak brethren that don't even understand whether there's one God or not. I guess I can understand that. But here he defines these as being without understanding. And then verse 12 also. Their corruption, you see. And then spots and blemishes, he calls them. These are spots and blemishes. See, they're not really saved. He says in verse 13, they're deceived. I rest my case. He says in verse 14, these people that he says were born again, I don't believe it. He says they have eyes full of adultery that cannot see some sin. Brother, is that the description of a regenerated child of God? I don't think so. I think you'll have a hard time convincing our good Baptist brethren here of that. You have to do better than that. He says plainly in verse 14, they cannot cease from sin. It says they beguile unstable souls. They're beguilers. They have covetous hearts. They're cursed children. They're wells without water. They're clouds carried about. And then verse 19, they themselves are the servants of corruption. How could you miss that? And then finally, and I've argued this with him before, brother, that sow that was washed only had an external washing. And you get one of these shallow ground hearers and getting baptized, you're going to wash the outside of it, I guarantee you. But you're not going to change his nature like that pig. And if that's all we do is wash the pig, give that pig the first opportunity, and he's going to run right back to the mire. Because unless you change the nature of that pig, where that pig is no longer a pig, where he desires the mire, he's going to run right back to it. And if you wash a dog, there's going to be a dog, right? And that dog is going to go back to its vomit again. I want to ask you, is it possible that a pig not go back into the mire? I mean, here he's saying it's inevitable that these people are going to be lost. Because they've only been externally washed like the Pharisees. He says, you may clean the outside of the cup and platter, but inwardly you are ravening wolves. I want to look at some things in Galatians real quickly in my last few minutes. He thinks that Galatians teaches that you can lose your salvation. I've dealt with Galatians 5:4, but you are fallen from grace. And let me say this one thing real quick too about making your calling and election sure. Whether you don't make it sure to God, God knows them that are His. But we make it sure to ourselves. How do you know you're one of the elect? That's what he's dealing with. I don't see any argument denying what we believe and what he brought up on 2 Peter chapter 1. Now, look at Galatians 2:21. Very important passage. He says there, I do not frustrate the grace of God. For if righteousness come by the law, then Christ is dead in vain. To preach justification by law keeping brings two absurd consequences. What are they? One, grace and salvation is denied or frustrated. And two, Christ died in vain. So Paul is affirming two things that are not true. He's saying Christ did not die in vain. And anybody that has a system of salvation that has Christ dying in vain has subverted the gospel of the grace of God. And anybody that teaches salvation by law keeping has frustrated the grace of God. Now notice,
what verse you want to see?
2:21, Galatians 2:21. Now look at Galatians 3:4. Paul says, if it yet be in vain, then he's in doubt about some their salvation, some of them there. According to him, what he addressed them all as brothers. So therefore they were all saved. But why would he say, I stand in doubt of you, of some of you? And why would he say in Galatians 4:19, I travail in birth again until Christ be formed in you? Galatians 4:19. Galatians 4:20, I stand in doubt of you, meaning about some of you. And then in Galatians 5:4, whoever among you thinks you're justified by the law, you are fallen from grace. So he clearly makes a distinction in Galatians between those who are apostates, who only seemingly are saved, and those who are not. He even says in Galatians 5:4, I would that they were even cut off which trouble you. They're in the church. I wish the Lord would just kill them and take them out of the way. Now look at Galatians 5:6 and 6:15. It's amazing that he repeats the same thing twice in Galatians. He says in Galatians 5:6, for in Jesus Christ neither circumcision availeth anything nor uncircumcision, but faith which worketh by love. Brother, that word avail means if you're a new creature in Christ, it's going to overcome. That's what the word avail means, overpower. He positively says here that if you're a new creature in Christ, that being a new creature in Christ will avail. No question about it. Circumcision doesn't avail. He doesn't believe being a new creature in Christ avails. Not unless you let it avail. Here's 10 people become new creatures in Christ. Half of them fall away. Well, how could you say it avails to be a new creature then in such a case? And he repeats that also in Galatians 6. Paul says in Galatians 2:4, he mentions false brothers here. You know what's an interesting thing too? In Galatians 5:4, you are fallen from grace. He thinks that means they lost their salvation. Why is he continuing to call them brother after that thing?